Chisenhall, Walters, Kipnis, Santana. Here's a ball walloped down the left field line, deep to the corner.
Stay fair.
Brantley looks up, and it is gone. A leadoff home run for Brian Dozier.
Brian Dozier coming into the game hitting .583 against Danny Salazar, guy that throws in the upper 90s, throws high fastballs. Brian is a pretty good high ball, fastball hitter, and with two strikes, able to tomahawk that one in the left field. That's a classic Brian Dozier swing on a high fastball.
Was that Roy Smalley?
That wasn't Bert. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Stay fair. That was funny. Dick Bremer and Roy Smalley on Fox Sports North. Twitter yesterday didn't go so well, but this team's been on fire. We're joined by Tom Schreier. Tom writes for 105.com, also has a Sunday morning show with his other pals.
Yeah, Nick's gone. We got
Nick's gone?
Nick's gone. Nick didn't show up for one of those. So he'll be doing soccer. He'll have a soccer story up about Minnesota United, and he's been following that, you know, that franchise for a while. We had Sam Gordon on, who's a big basketball guy, talking about the playoffs. And then it's just me and Sam holding down the fort. When he takes a call, I got to talk a lot. So, it's been pretty exciting though. We do well.
You can talk.
I can talk a lot.
I've heard some of your stories.
Yeah, I don't know if they're any good, but there's a lot of words to be said, I guess. But yeah, no, it was fun. We have had Dave Schwartz on, and Sam edits my stuff, so he knows what I've written and, you know, kind of my voice and stuff like that.
Well, do you edit his stuff?
Yeah, I edit his stuff back.
Okay, well, that's good. So it's even. If he takes the knife out and takes too much out of yours, you can...
Yeah, exactly.
Come back and get him.
I feel like he's taken more out of mine than me out of his. He's a very good writer, very good like technical writer as well. So I don't have to do much work when I edit his stuff.
Oh, well, if you want to send it to me, I'm sure I can help you too.
Yeah, I'd be worried what a veteran columnist would think of
do a hell of a job. Hell of a job.
Well, thank you.
Well, I wanted to talk. We'll talk some Twins with Tom Schreier. Of course, Hellboy's here.
Yep. Hi.
David Helmer.
That hair's getting longer, isn't it? Is it just the headphones?
It still grows.
It's not the headphones.
It's still gross.
I know what I would prefer. Now, did your father ever tell you to get it? You need a trim or get a haircut? Your parents?
No.
Mine always did. But you're from another generation where you're getting shaggy yourself there, Tom.
I am. I like that flow in the summer.
Oh, okay, a little summer flow.
Yeah.
You don't like the summer buzz cut?
No, maybe I'll go with that, though, as it gets warmer.
You want to go Bud Grant?
No, go Bud
Grant. Crew cut?
Maybe we could do a charity event or something like that. Everyone can swipe a little hair off my head if they contribute or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you'll find a lot of people contributing to that. Maybe you can get a couple of cups of coffee out of it if you're lucky. All right, now, you were at the Wild today. They had their end of the season wrap up. You talked to players. You talked to Mike Yeo, Chuck Fletcher.
Yeah.
What was the overriding theme of what you heard?
The youth. I think that they believe that that's where the improvement will be. He said Niederreiter and Zucker specifically, Scandell and Dumba on the back end. Dumba, I felt like, made the biggest strides. I remember writing about him halfway through the season and him talking. I loved his mentality. I asked him, are you afraid to kind of make mistakes and jump in and assert yourself on a veteran, not a veteran defensive core, but, you know, 25 to, and then you got Suter as well. And he said, I'm more worried about not reaching my potential, which is scary. I mean, I think his potential is really being one of those top defensemen in the league. Now he's 20. It'll probably take years for him to do it, but he made young mistakes. I think he can take strides. Zucker really had a good year, and he really didn't want to talk about it. He was like, I'm just upset we lost. But he did acknowledge this is kind of a step forward from being a tweener to an actual NHL player. You hope a guy like Jordan Schrader can make that kind of that same step up. Christian Folin on the back end. I mean, there's a couple players still who are kind of question marks, but if you want to say one thing they've done very well, Mike Yeo has done very well, is make sure that these young players develop well. And I think Scandell has done that. I know Niederreiter has. Some of these other players, that's really kind of where the promise
now,
is for them.
Did they talk specifically about Coyle and then Granlund?
Yeah. Granlund, I think they talked about his playoffs and really were impressed with him. Also playing on a line with Pominville and Parisi. And Pominville had a down year in goals. He actually did have similar points. I think it was just six less points. But, he is playing with Zach Parisi, who is the star of the team. Some people feel should be the captain.
I felt that since they signed him.
Yeah. I mean, and even just talking, I've talked to as many people as I can. My take on that, they did not address trades. What they did address is that there's not a huge free agent pool, and that really they don't really have that much money to spend because they got to get Dubnyk. They're probably going to have to, they do have to re-sign Zucker and Granlund, who are restricted free agents. They still have to fill out kind of their bottom six. I don't think they're going to go with free agents, but if you're going to pull off a trade, I think Koivu has to be part of it if you're trying to transfer the captaincy to Zach Parise. I think it'd be awkward to have like the captaincy move to Parise and Koivu still on the team as one of the original guys who's been there, obviously, before kind of they started spending money and they brought in Suter and Parise.
Other than the C that he wears, who maybe inside the locker room, he's a great captain, but the perception outside is the leader of that team is Parise anyway.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it's kind of a silly thing, and what's the big deal? What, are you going to bruise his feelings?
Yeah, I mean, I just remember I saw it with San Jose because I was out there, and they obviously moved it from Marlowe to Thornton, and now they have a complete mess. I mean, that's gone from – I have a friend who still covers the team when we started at the same time, and he goes, dude, I know it looked good when you were here. It's a complete mess. The GM looks like he's kind of meddling in the coach's affair. The coach left, and that's not all the captaincy, but I think there was always this kind of competition, at least on the outside it seemed like, between Marlowe and Thornton. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe you just take off the letter, give Koivu the A and the C to Parise. The one thing I'll say is Koivu, I feel like, is just kind of, he's a broken record kind of when you keep on asking questions during the season. Parise usually kind of takes the initiative and says, you know, almost kind of changes the narrative. It will say, you know, state his opinion. Koivu at the same time seemed to gather himself more after big losses or after losing the series. He really was kind of clear-headed. And ultimately, I believe that the people in the locker room have to make that decision, that it's about the players. But it seems like, I'm with you, it seems like Parise is kind of the captain. He is kind of the, he's Captain America. You'd think he'd be captain of the Minnesota
team. It's overblown, too. I mean, what are they, it's not like they, the captain called the captain's practice and we got to do, or he's going to make a speech. Who cares? I mean, anyone on that team can step up. You don't have to have the C or the A or any of that.
The only time I think it'll matter is when do you make the transfer from kind of, these guys are getting older and not as productive, to who's kind of the next in line. Like, do you, you know, I don't know if they'll be around still, but do you give it to Charlie Coyle or Matt Dumba or, you know, Burdine or something like that? You know, who's kind of your next crop? Other than that, unless it's a changing of a generation, I agree. I think it's, you know, it's important, but what's more important is personnel. And, who, you know, is Thomas Vanek done? Is Koivu a third line center at this point? You know, how do you find a scorer? If Vanek, I like how they went from Vanek's a game breaker that to, he's a setup guy. I mean, he was a guy who set people up in the past. He was known for the 40 goals he scored in Buffalo.
Let's just say that it became what happened last year in Montreal when a lot of us here said, fourth line, what are they doing to him? Well, it's obvious why he was on the fourth line. If he performed the way he did in the Chicago series, it made sense.
Yeah, it just, he was not... I think back to that breakaway he had, and it just looked like there was no chance that puck was going in. You know, Granlund at least on his breakaway, Crawford made a great save on him. That was, I mean, he shot it right into kind of his pads. At no point in that series did I feel like he was. I mean, a game changer. I would say in that second game, now Suter made a mistake losing Kane, but he had that terrible pass across the middle at the end of the period, and Kane scores, you know, and finishes off. Parise's a good player. He's not kind of he's not a goal scorer. He's a two-way player, right? I think you need kind of a goal scorer on this team.
Well, was the overriding theme then that they expect the young players to mature to the point that they then can compete with Chicago? Is that sort of what you got?
Yeah, and I mean, I understand some of that logic. I don't know what to make of Coyle. He's a nice player that if he could learn how to do faceoffs better, he is physical. He's a big size. I think he is one of the more outspoken young players in the locker room. He also does a good job moving from line to line and wing to center. But I don't know what his upside is. Niederreiter was at one time supposed to kind of help save the Islanders, and obviously it didn't work out. I think he played too soon there. Needed to change his scenery. But they got him at a good price. He is, I think, a good player. He has some physical kind of nasty aspect to him, but he should be a goal scorer. And Zucker's fast. I mean, Zucker's been, anytime the puck's cruising down the ice, you think he's going to take away the icing. You know, he definitely skates well, handles well. He can finish at times. I don't know what his ceiling is. I feel like Niederreiter has the bigger ceiling, but Zucker's a great player. And then hopefully, you know, Scandella will score from the back end. And obviously there's some things he has to round off, but he's a pretty good defenseman on the back there.
I'm going to give you a couple of guys here, okay? Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me who's the youngest of this group, all right? Charlie Coyle, Niederreiter, or Granlund?
Is it Granlund?
No, it's Niederreiter. He's 22.
Yeah, and that's what you
got to
think.
Granlund's 23, and so is Coyle. So, I mean, I actually was surprised. I looked it up last week because Niederreiter was traded. Just assume he's a little bit older. I mean, he's one of the youngest guys on this team.
No, he came up at 18. I mean, right out of junior. He played in Portland, so some people in the U.S. actually saw him play. But it's like Brodine. When I was thinking about the back end, I was like, I guess Brodine's not that old. He's only 21, and he's so far ahead. Now, I think Fletcher brought up 2 points. He said, I think they dressed 10 players under 25, and Chicago had 4. So, I mean, that's one thing he's saying is in the long run, you have to keep in mind Chicago's going to run into some cap issues. There may be a weird year that, where they kind of lose in the first round to a really hot team. There's variables there. I think Chicago's a team they'll see. But the one advantage they have is that they're aging players. I think some of them will be fine. I think Breezy will be good into his 30s. I think Suter will be good into his 30s. I don't know about Koivu. I don't know about Vanek. I'm more convinced about Pominville than I think the average person is. But luckily, they should have, you know, people to replace them as they come up. Studies have been done, and they say goaltenders are older and better at that age, so Dubnyk should have some good years ahead of him. And defensemen take a while to learn the game. And then you have, like, Nick Lidstrom's a kind of a freak, but he could play until he's 40. 23 to 28 is their best productive years, or at least most consistent for most forwards. So that's a great sign for the Wild. You just listed their ages. It's mostly 22, 23, 24,
he's 25. The youngest forward. The only two younger ones are Brodin and Dumba.
Yeah, and Dumba, I think, is going to be spectacular. I don't know how, you know, Fletcher also mentioned in the press conference kind of the potential upside for, you know, offense from Brodin, and I'd never really thought that was part of his game. And one of the reasons why you might see that split up is that him and Suter were defensive players. But, I mean, Brodin, for him to learn defense like that and to fit seamlessly, he's like a long snapper. You don't notice him, and you know he's doing his job well because of that. I don't know where, you know, he obviously can make strides upwards, but I don't know where that offense is going to come from. I feel like that's a player like Scandella, like Dumba, Spurgeon to some extent as well.
Now, they've had a few days, obviously, to deal with this, a weekend and several days last week, or a few days. I remember when the Vikings, the worst I've ever seen the Vikings handle a loss was, and this goes back, 1987, when they lost to the Washington Redskins in the NFC Championship game. These guys were absolutely devastated. Now, and that lasted several days. Again, it's been a weekend and then some. These guys, I mean, did you notice a lot of just disappointment now or devastation that they already put it into perspective?
It matters guy to guy. Like, Koivu kind of handled it in stride when it first happened, and then today just goes kind of the same guy. Preezy was devastated after the loss. I mean, he just couldn't talk. He was better today. I think, you know, you could still tell, you know, it was kind of weighing on him. Dubnyk really took it hard, and he took it very hard after the game and really didn't seem to kind of get over it today. A guy like Dumba, I think, just he understands. I mean, Matt Cook told the younger players, he's like, just don't take this for granted. This doesn't happen every year. You know, it comes at whatever point in your career. But Dumba, I think, knows he has good, you know, good series ahead of him. Didn't seem too broken up. So I think it mattered guy to guy. I think Yo still takes it pretty hard. And I think it's because there was some shock. And they're not incredibly forthcoming about this, but I think they've admitted in some capacity that this felt like their year and that they were one of the best teams at the end of the year and that they weren't supposed to lose to Chicago. And for it to come that fast and for them never to have a lead, I think your coach actually takes a big brunt of that.
And by the way, that voice you're hearing is Tom Schreier. He has not had his, well, his world-renowned cackle yet today. That's part of it. Let's show people. That one's for...
That's the machine one.
That one's going to be there for posterity, that one. But, boy, I sure would have liked to heard you laugh when you were a kid.
No.
Tom Schreier, 105thetticket.com. Also Sunday mornings, he and Sam Ekstrom co-host.
Yep.
They dumped poor Nick.
Yeah, Nick will still be on.
They nosed them out.
He'll still be on. He likes to sleep. Nick likes to sleep in.
No, but now it's just you two kids.
Yeah, we have some good guests. I mean, we, you know, people are luckily coming on with us, and I don't know. Like I said, I have a lot to say, I guess.
Well, that's good. I know Hellboy and I were just sitting back while you were cruising through the last, what are you talking about, an hour straight? Oh, it just seemed that way. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, my goodness.
No, you were terrific. We are going to take a quick break when we return. Actually, you know this young man.
Yeah, Tyler.
Tyler Mason from Fox Sports North. He, unlike you, was bragging.
What?
That he had covered every game of the homestand.
Yeah.
You had all but two of them?
Yeah, all but two, I believe. Brandon
Slacker.
Was there, the other two. I know. Tyler Mason. I'll have to take this up with him.
We'll talk about that. Talk to Tyler Mason about the Twins from Fox Sports North when we return. We are joined by Tyler Mason from Fox Sports North. Hey, Tyler, thanks for taking the time with us.
Yeah, no problem.
You've embarrassed the hell out of Tom Schreier.
Yeah.
You did every game on the homestand, and he only did, well, he missed two of the games, so he's a slacker, and you're an Iron Man.
Well, it was a long homestand, 11 games. I think it's the longest of the year. And, by the midway point, it was like, wow, we still have, five or six games to go. But, Tom held his own. I think nine out of 11 isn't too bad, so I'll give him some credit.
Yeah, but 11-11 is pretty impressive. You batted 1,000. He didn't. Now, let me ask you this, Tyler. You've seen something that many, many people have not seen in 4 years or more, a Twins team that went on a roll.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. You know, this is my fifth full season covering the team. Now I started in 2011, so I've seen all four of the last 90 plus lost seasons. And just you go into the clubhouse after those games when they were playing the way they did, and it was pretty depressing a lot of the time, to be honest. And I know it's still early, but it's been a breath of fresh air to see this team playing the way they are, and it seems like they're having fun. And you go into the locker room after the games now, and it's a different vibe. And I don't know how much Paul Molitor has had an impact on just kind of the overall atmosphere, but to see them playing as well as they have, yesterday's game kind of notwithstanding, it's been a relief, I guess, for those of us who cover the team.
Well, let me ask you this, Tyler: how much of it do you? Obviously, you certainly have to give credit to Molitor, but how much of it do you put on Torrey Hunter's presence in that clubhouse?
Yeah, I think that that has been a big impact. Just talking to a couple of the guys after one of the games during that homestand, Ricky Nolasco mentioned the impact that Torrey Hunter's had. I think it was Trevor Plouffe talked about the leadership that Torrey has brought to. He's in that corner locker, reserved for one of the veterans, and I think in the clubhouse has been big. But you look at what he's done on the field too. I think his production has maybe exceeded my expectations. For what he was going to be able to do. He's tied for the team lead with home runs. He leads the team in RBIs. He's batting .287 at this point. So, I expect maybe some of those numbers to tail off a little bit. But he's been probably one of their best hitters, and I didn't expect that, when they signed him this offseason. So he's been maybe their most important player to this point.
What do you make of Trevor Plouffe's season? I mean, he got a slow start, seemed to have that home run that kind of lifted him a little bit, and his defense has been better. I mean, I think we both saw it, Tyler, years ago when he'd be throwing the ball into the seats and stuff like that, a converted third baseman. What do you think of his play, just both offensively and defensively?
Yeah, I've been more impressed, I think, with his defensive improvements. You mentioned the struggles he had. He moved from shortstop to third base, and I think that allowed him to kind of clear his head a little bit and maybe learn that position a little bit more. But just over the last couple of years, we've seen it get better and better. Whether it's just little small things like his footwork or his arm or accuracy or being able to go to balls to his left, he's been really improved in that area. And I think he's a more consistent and well-rounded hitter now. A couple of years ago, we saw that home run streak that he had where I can't remember what he finished with, 24, 28 home runs, something like that. And a lot of them were solo home runs. So now he's driving in more runs. He's hitting the ball the opposite field too. I think he's just becoming a more complete player offensively and defensively. And for this team to take a step forward, it's going to be up to guys like Trevor Plouffe and some others, Brian Dozier, for example, to take that next step in their career. And we've certainly seen that from Trevor.
Did you get a feeling with, because Mauer had, he was hurt, but he also had a bad year last year. It's much better this year. I always felt he just did not want to go to first. Do you feel that he's finally, he's in acceptance now. He was in denial about it last year, and that has a lot to do with why he's hitting better.
Yeah, I think that's certainly part of it. He definitely looks more comfortable at first base. I think at times I kind of forget that he isn't a natural first baseman when you watch him play defense. And we saw that was a work in progress a bit last year too. And his first full year there, early in the year last year, he didn't quite look comfortable on some more routine plays. And now it seems like he knows where to go on all the plays. And, he isn't making as many mistakes. But, I think a key from Howard too is that, he talked about having a full healthy offseason this past year, whereas last offseason he was still dealing with some of those concussion symptoms that were lingering a little bit. So he kind of got started late on his workouts, and he's such a detail-oriented guy and kind of has his routine that I think that threw him off a little bit and just never quite got comfortable with the play last season. So I think having that full offseason this year has been big too for him to kind of get back into the groove a little bit.
Now, what do you think about the way Santana's been playing? He seems to be
playing, you know, hitting better than he did. But the whole, the walks are, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, it's having, for a while there, for the first basically month of the season, his batting average was the same as his on-base percentage. Lean into a pitch if you're not going to walk. Get hit.
Yeah, that's definitely been a little troubling. You know, I think, I can't remember how long ago it was, maybe 4 or 5 games ago when he finally drew his first walk. He's only got 2 walks all year and 113 at-bats. So that's certainly something that's a little bit troubling. But I'm actually a little more, I guess, troubled by his defense at shortstop. You know, I think he has 9 or 10 errors already. You know, obviously he played a lot of center field last year and didn't play a whole lot at shortstop just because the Twins needed someone in the outfield and he was athletic enough to go do it. But, you know, they need him to shore up his defense a little bit and not make so many of these mistakes and these throws. So, yeah, I think with more time and more experience at the position, he'll be just fine. But, you know, offensively, we saw what he did last year, and I think he's picked up a little bit on that. But, you know, I think the defense is still the part that worries me the most.
Now, Tyler, do you travel at all with the team?
I don't. I did go down to spring training for about a week this year, but otherwise pretty much just the home games.
Now, how tough is that for you, I mean, to cover a team? Because I know whenever – I mean, I covered the Vikings, obviously, home and away games, and I did that. I never covered baseball. Frankly, I think you have the best world because you go to the home games. The, you know, traveling home or away is grueling, but do you feel like you're a little bit out of the loop when you're not there? You just watch the games and you still stay engaged.
Yeah, no, I definitely still watch when they're on the road. You know, it is tough at times just to kind of get a gauge for the clubhouse when I'm not around them. But, you know, I do my best as soon as I get home to kind of catch up and, you know, talk to as many players as I can and kind of, you know, get a pulse for the team. But, you know, watching on TV, obviously, you get to get a sense of how they're playing and then, you know, listening to monitor after each game. But it is a little difficult not being on the road. But at the same time, I'm okay with not having to go to Detroit and Cleveland a couple times a year. So I guess that's an okay trade-off.
Well, you're right. That's a very good trade-off. You know, but for a guy like you who goes to every game, unlike Tim Schreier, blows off games on the homestand, that it must be a little tougher for you than him. Because Tom's used to just sliding back and, you know, kicking back and missing 2 games of homestand.
Yeah, well, I got to teach Tom how to make sure he gets to every game here. He's not exactly Cal Ripken in that regard.
No, he's not. You, on the other hand, you are the Iron Man of home games. Even the beat guys take off on some home games now and then, but you're not doing that. Now, take a step back. What do you figure this the way the year will go? They have had a great, you know, a really good run. Last night's or yesterday's loss notwithstanding, but what do you see as the record this year?
Yeah, you know, I think they could hover around 500 for you know, a good length of the season. Obviously, they're above 500 right now, but you know, I think some of that will come back to earth a little bit. You know, I'm still curious to see how the starting pitching is going to shake out. You know, Mike Telfrey has oddly enough been their best starter, and you know, I don't know if we can expect that to continue or not. But you know, I think the Twins keep waiting for Ricky Nolasco to get on track, and you know, Phil Hughes as well. He's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start. So you know, as long as this rotation can see some improvement like they have, I think they'll be okay in that regard. And this offense, you know, I don't expect them to keep the pace that they have over the last 14 or 15 games or so, when they've scored 6 or 7 runs a game. But I think they can be, you know, around 500 at least into, you know, middle of the summer and kind of see where it goes from there. But you know, after that first week when they went 1-5 on the road trip and they lost that first game at home too, a lot of people were kind of thinking that this was another lost season. But you know, I think they've changed a lot of people's opinions, including my own, just the way they played lately. So if they can keep that up, they can at least keep fans interested and keep things exciting for a little bit.
We're talking to Tyler Mason from Fox Sports North. Tom Schreier from 105 The Ticket is here also. Tyler, of course, the Iron Man. Tom, straw man. But let me ask both of you, because you and Tom, you've been around the team occasionally. How is Terry Ryan? I really like Terry, and he's not the type of guy that would be, but is he a little bit smug because of Pelfrey and that some of the guys he brought in that were, you know, seem like failures, some of the starting pitching has come around for him?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if smug's the right word. I think he's probably obviously excited and relieved that some of these guys that they brought in, you know, like you said, Pelfrey has finally started to pitch better. But you sense some frustration too from him with guys like Nolasco that haven't quite panned out for how they, you know, what they had hoped. But you know, he takes full responsibility when somebody, you know, he admits that he's the guy that signed him and, you know, gave him the big money. So I mean, it's certainly good for him if these players do, and reflects well on him. So you know, he's probably rooting just as hard as anybody for guys like Telfrey and Nolasco and, you know, Irvin Santana when he finally does join the team to pitch and perform well.
Tyler, I got to tell you, we we actually should have been having you on a lot sooner. You're good. You're not Tom Schreier good. Now I have to build him up again because I just tore him down.
Yes.
But here, Tyler, one thing you didn't do is you don't cackle. And Tom has made – that's why we love Tom. Have you heard his – can he hear his cackle? Well, you heard the real one.
I know the infamous Tom Schreier cackle. I think
that's because he's always laughing at the Twins when he's those few times that he shows up.
Oh, no.
Tyler, we want to have you on again. We'll talk to you again. We'll try to make this a little more regular if you have the time for it. You're good and fun to have on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Sounds good.
All right, Tyler, take care. Tyler Mason from Fox Sports North. We will talk to you very soon. Thank you. Tom, I tell you, I'm just giving you a little crap. I know you're the iron. What would be a soft iron? Hellboy, what do we got that's you're sort of like the Tin Man.
Soft iron.
Tin's not like you crinkle.
Aluminum.
Aluminum Man.
I'm the Aluminum Man.
You're the Aluminum Man.
It's a love fest here.
No, we think the world of you. We wouldn't pick on you if it wasn't exuding love.
Well, thank you.
It's all love, love, love with you. Tom, thank you so much for stopping by. You are our hero. You can hang out if you want. We got we have next, though, and you're not going to get the chance to talk to this guy, even though he can probably help you. Bob Rotella, written a great book, How Champions Think in Sports and in Life. He's worked with a ton of professional athletes and coaches. Had been at the University of Virginia, but he's worked with every major golfer. He worked with LeBron James. He's done it all and worked with everyone, and he has a great book out. We'll talk to him next. Dr. Bob Rotella, when we return. We're joined by Dr. Bob Rotella. He just wrote a book, How Champions Think in Sports and in Life. Bob, I appreciate you taking the time with us.
Great being with you, Bob.
Now, this is it's not coincidental because a lot of things are not. They happen. In the first chapter of your book, you wrote about LeBron James and his desire to be the best basketball player ever. Did you think of your conversations with him when he hit the game-winning shot at the buzzer yesterday for the Cavs?
Well, my first thought was just being really happy for him that he was a talented athlete who had the dedication and the aspirations to really go after it, and he really spent a lot of hours working on his shooting physically and mentally. And, back a few years ago, it was admitting to himself that I've got to become a better three-point shooter and a better free-throw shooter if I want to win championships. And, it's an evolving process. I think he keeps getting better over the years. And I think part of it is he's getting better as a player and skill-wise, and he's getting better as a leader of his team. And I think it's very admirable. And I'm very impressed with the fact that, he probably brought up without a lot of wealth. And now that he's wealthy, he's still hungry. And I think it's easy to be poor and hungry. I think it's another thing to be really wealthy and hungry. Yep. And it's pretty impressive. I mean, he's very well-grounded, but with a lot of confidence. I was just really happy for him. I mean, most of my life is helping people with their dreams, and, that's what I get my kick out of.
Nope. We're talking to Dr. Bob Rotella. He wrote a book just out last, I think May 5th is when it made its debut.
Yes.
How Champions Think in Sports and in Life. You know what was interesting about LeBron James after yesterday's game when he hit the game-winning shot? And I've been a columnist for a quarter of a century, and I've covered sports, been on the radio for longer than that. And it seems something inherent in a lot of superstars. Afterward, he made a point of letting everyone know that his coach called a different play, and he overruled it, and he wanted to be, I'm taking the last shot. The coach wanted him to make an inbounds play, and he said, I'm taking that last shot. Is that something you find at the superstar level? They want everyone to know. Maybe it's sort of an affirmation for them that they did the right thing and made the right call.
Well, first of all, it's a great issue and a great question. I think that kind of gives them a better feeling about themselves. But to me, the real key is that early in the game, he's very happy distributing the ball and doing anything he can do to help the confidence of his teammates because he knows he needs them to win championships. But when the game was on the line, he wants to make it clear, hey, give me the ball. Let me be the guy. And I think it's admirable because you have to be willing to miss that shot. All of the great ones have missed a lot of those game-winning shots. And it's interesting. I should add that I spent a decent amount of time with Derrick Rose, and I would say Derrick Rose and LeBron are the only two players who have ever looked me in the face and said, I want to be the greatest player of all time. And it was interesting, the last two games, I mean, they made incredible game-winning shots. But they're both very impressive people.
And well, Derek, he told you that when he was at Memphis State, right? He was still in college.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, he's both of them have a level of ambition and discipline and dedication. I mean, if you look at the injuries Derek has gone through and come back from, and then to prove everyone crazy and come back this year and be able to do what he's doing in the playoffs, I mean, you get an idea of how great their attitude is and, you know, their persistence at, you know, getting in shape and dealing with whatever you have to deal with. You know, I mean, LeBron hasn't had the injuries of that kind yet. Jordan didn't have a lot of that. But Derek has had some real adversity in terms of injuries to the part of his body that really is pretty darn important to him. And he just keeps coming back in better shape.
Yeah, it's then that's also it's impressive about him. A lot of other guys, he had money guaranteed. He could be set for life, but he wants to prove how good he is, and he can be among the best when he's healthy. It's certainly a testament to him.
Yeah, I mean, he's really into being great, and he's very into bringing Chicago more championships. I mean, he's certainly got his act together as well.
And we're talking to Dr. Bob Rotella, who has written How Champions Think in Sports and in Life. Now, of all the athletes you've met and worked with, and it's, I'm sure, well into the hundreds or more than that, who had the greatest blend of confidence and athletic ability? Would it be one of these two, LeBron or Derrick Rose? Or there's many, many others in every, you know, you've golf and football. I mean, you've dealt with every sport. Who are the ones that stand out? I don't know if you could limit it to just one.
You know, those two would be way up there. I'd certainly think of Greg Maddux as being way up there. Richard Petty's spent a couple days at my home. I'd say he was unbelievable. I even from a coaching standpoint, I look at Coach Cal. I look at Joe Gibbs. They're all pretty darn impressive in terms of getting everything they could out of themselves.
Yep. You know, who's an interesting guy to me, and I'm wondering if you ever worked with Randy Moss.
No, I haven't.
The reason I mention him, because he played for the Vikings, and he was renowned for saying, I play when I want to play. And when he did, he was incredible. When he didn't want to play, he was a non-factor in games. Have you met many athletes like that, guys who cared only some of the time, but when they cared, it was through the roof?
Yeah, and I think that keeps guys like Randy Moss from being one of the greats of the greats of all time. I mean, you go back to Lombardi. I mean, you have to be an everyday player. And if you're only a once-in-a-while player, and that's what was fascinating about Belichick when he got Randy Moss, you know, he got him to play pretty darn great.
Yeah, he did.
And I think it's, you know, with team sports, it's some combination of having the right coach, having the right strategy, and having the guy in the right place. And coaches play a big role in that. And, you know, that's why coaches, I mean, I learned it very early in life that, you know, coaches, whether they want to admit it or not, they have a big impact on players' heads. And you just watch players who get in the wrong situation with the wrong coaches, and they get destroyed, and other players with the right coaches just flower. And it sure helps if you get the right situation.
Now, you worked with, obviously, University of Virginia, and I asked that question wondering if they would be who you'd mention. When it comes to working with someone or a team, who or what team has been your greatest accomplishment? That run after Ralph Sampson left was a terrific run.
Yeah, in 1984, that was a lot of fun, that's for sure. But you know, and people would look at that as great because the perception of the media and the experts around the team was that once Ralph left, we wouldn't be any good, and that no one else on the team was that talented. And what was amazing, I think all five of the guys ended up getting drafted after we went to the Final Four that year. So, I mean, you know, it kind of brought them together. Kind of like the Ricky Fowler thing the other day. I mean, talking about people, you know, thinking he was overrated. I think that team dealt constantly with the idea that no one else thought they'd be any good.
Yep.
And so we kind of banded together and kind of decided that, well, we were going to be the only people in the world who thought we could do it. And they kept flowering. And, of course, I've stayed close with Rick Carlisle, who's now won an NBA championship and is having a lot of success coaching. And he was a guy, he started at the University of Maine, averaged 10 points his first year in college, and decided he was too good for Maine and transferred to Virginia and had a great run there. And people think, well, how do you transfer from Maine to the ACC? But he did. He had a lot of belief in himself.
Now, talking to Dr. Bob Rotella, he wrote, just came out last week, How Champions Think in Sports and in Life. I know I was surprised you talked to Ben Hogan. I didn't, later in his life, but you've talked to a lot of guys who were champions going back to the 50s and 60s and maybe even a little before. But who do you wish you had a chance to talk to about their approach? The guy who comes to mind for me, and maybe it's others, but Babe Ruth would seem like a guy that I would think you'd want to talk to.
Yeah, Babe would have been real interesting to talk to. I think Bobby Jones would have been real interesting to talk to. The other guy that would have been a great interview would have been Walter Hagen.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, it would have been a real kick to spend some time with Ted Williams. Because he's certainly fascinating. If it's true that he was one of the greatest fighter pilots ever, he was one of the greatest fly fishermen ever, and by a lot of people's opinion, one of the greatest hitters ever. I mean, that's pretty remarkable,
If he put his mind to it, he got it done. He probably would have been the great. You could have spent your career working on a guy like that in that mind.
Yeah, I mean, and it's very fascinating. I was a big fan of John Havlicek and Bill Russell and Cousy and those guys, and certainly Jerry West and Lucas and a bunch of that generation. I mean, pretty amazing. Bill Bradley was amazing. I mean, to be a Rhodes Scholar and the best basketball player in the country. And he had a great line in one of his early books. And he basically said, if I'm the best player in the country and I'm working harder and better than you are every day, how could you possibly ever expect to catch me?
That is
a lot right there.
Hey, the time just flew by. There's so many more things I wish I could ask you. Dr. Bob Rotella, How Champions Think in Sports and in Life. It's a great book. I have it, and I've read it, and I really appreciate you taking the time with us.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great talking to you.
All right, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you again to Dr. Bob Rotella. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.